All right, guys, I guess we'll get started. First on the agenda is approval of the previous minutes. Do I have a motion? Do I have a second? All right, all in favor, say aye. Any nays? Under old business.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
We've got some new faces at the door round table.
Fred, what's here with the NPO?
Brian Aldridge with Santec. Brent Schmidt, city engineer for Evansville. John Stoll, Vanderbilt County engineer. Saw him in Dallas.
Melissa Bobble, Mark Evansville.
Sean Hayden, the CMO.
Ben Jones, making transportation gentleman.
Tanya Paul, the state senator.
John Stoll, the United Associates.
Carrie Aiken, Evansville, yeah. And Rock Evansville, yeah.
Trey, who's that, Evansville, yeah.
I'm Ron London, the executive director in their plan.
Jason Orange, KYCC.
Tom Bergman, City of Evansville.
Gary Camp, Maps.
Rob Schaefer, yeah.
Aaron Schaefer, yeah.
And you do, Jason, I'm sure. Denise Johnson, Park, Evansville.
Andy Chang, with the Evansville Police Department. We should have not had this one here.
All right. Under old business,
For another city residential project, Washington and Wayne intersection, the first section of pavement, carrying over the driveway section, is in the The MSC wall construction is approximately 95% complete. Contractor is now working on the bridge. City Greenway Township, Tyrone Corner. The topographic field survey is complete and field check design plans are in development. We anticipate that we'll be holding a field check sometime in October. In the mid-levy corner connection, the city is preparing a request for proposals for the project development and development. The Evansville Climbing Inventory Replacement Project. The first phase of that project was led on July 8th, and the low bid was approximately $347,000, and it was received from Michiana Contracting. The project has been awarded, and notice to proceed was issued to the contractor on July 27th. The state of the school project is complete and related to the project. Vanderbilt County project, Burkhart and Virginia. The project construction is ahead of schedule and a key final walkthrough is going to be held in the next couple of weeks. And we're going to school over the road. Phase 2, the project was left for bid yesterday. Current bid results indicated that no bid received was below the engineer's estimate, but the new Sean is correct in my mind, the low bid is a war. Phase 3, an open house has been scheduled for Thursday, September 10th from 6:30 to 8:30 at JH Ashford Elementary School. Looking at the in that project, the city was 6 months in necessary as being a bypass was recently directed. The phase 2 of that project was left to bid yesterday as well. Current bid results indicate no bid received with the low to end year estimate. It's also been determined to be a work. City Henderson project, same name for that June. The project is rescheduled for letting to today, September 3rd. And then the KYCC project, the Highway 60 Crossville Bridge. A public meeting was held on August 25th. That's all of the updates. Can I ask you any questions?
Under new business,
Yeah, so I'd ask you to explain a little bit about the study. Some time ago, the locals submitted some things to us and asked us to the traffic cabinet to look at 41, see if we could do anything with traffic. I don't know how many of you are familiar with it. It's very, very busy corridor over there. So what we did is we talked to our traffic guy, and we've done as much internally as we can, pretty much, with signal timings and that sort of thing. So the next step was we worked on board, and they take a look at some possible fixes that we could do to improve that corridor. And that's what Brian Alder was standing up here talking about today. So just a brief background on why we did this study. Henderson was passing up about using some of their SAT planning support, so we decided to move ahead with it. So,
appreciate the opportunity to be here today. When Clayton asked if I'd be willing to do this presentation, I said, absolutely. And then when he said, you got about 15 minutes, I said, well, okay. So I'm going to probably do my best to get through about 45 minutes worth of material in 15 minutes, but I think we can do that. I'm kind of going to just jump right into it. We've got a couple of handouts. I'm not going to go through all the conceptual projects that have been developed over the course of the study, but this information is going to be available here very soon, because we're in the process of developing our draft report as we speak. Within the next 2 weeks or so, we're going to have that submitted to the Transportation Cabinet for their initial review. Our schedule is really about an 8-month-long study schedule that started back in the spring. We're going to wrap it up before the end of October, so our final report will be made available on the KYEC website for probably the end of the year at least, but more likely before the next year. So our goal is to have a final report submitted before the end of October. With that being said, again, most of you are probably familiar with the study area. And I should introduce myself again one more time. Again, I'm Brian Aldridge, and I was the project manager for this study for Stantec. I serve as our deputy transportation planning department manager. So in that capacity, I kind of lead all of our scoping studies, all of our planning and traffic studies. So that's kind of why I'm here today. So for those of you that maybe aren't quite as familiar with this section of 41 on the south side of the river, the study area itself really starts just north of the U.S. 60 interchange. It stops once you get north of Ogden State Park. That intersection happens to be called Stratton Road on the west side. On the east side, it's Moorfield Road. So the corridor is a little over 2 miles in length. And really, this section is what it's known for are these adjacent back-to-back left turn lanes down the middle. The section that we got out there consists of 2 or 3 lanes in each direction with this really 30-foot wide median, if you will, that consists of those 2 left turn lanes and then a 6-foot strip of concrete in the center that's mountable. So it's not quite plush, but it is slightly raised and mountable. So we were asked to evaluate this section, kind of look at what some of the issues are out there and what can be done to hopefully address some of the safety congestion concerns. So one of the things I'm going to start with is that we've worked with the local officials and some stakeholders over the course of the study, and one of the questions that we asked was just what are some of the issues out there that need to be addressed by any of the projects that come out as recommendations from the study. And so on a scale from 1 to 7, we asked them to rank in order, for 1 being the highest priority and 7 being the lowest priority, what are the issues out there again that they need to address? And so we'll see that improving safety was 1, reducing congestion was 2, and then the others kind of fall out in the noise. We asked, access management is one of those that we mentioned just in a generic fashion. What do you think about access management? And that was kind of a 3rd scored issue that's out there. One of the handouts that I provided, and I apologize that it's actually kind of printed upside down. I had a nice stack of those printed on cardstock. It's really a trifold brochure, and somehow those mysteriously disappeared from my desk over the last 2 days. So as I was running out of the office this morning, I had to ask someone to print those things again quickly, and I printed them upside down. So that's why they're not folded for you today. But that's just a general overview of access management, what it means, and again, some of the issues and goals that we're trying to address in the study. So kind of, I'm not going to go through all that information just because of our time today, but that just kind of gives you a general overview of the study in terms of. So, crash history. We're looking back at the last 3 years of available data. We have 433 recorded crashes within the stretch of US 41. So there were multiple locations, primarily centered around some of the more significant intersections that have a higher than average rate of crashes. And so those are some of the locations we obviously want to look at and the things that we can do there to provide some safety countermeasures to improve that crash experience throughout the world. And if you look at the types of collisions that happened over the last 3 years, well, if you just look at the rear end the angle collision, and the opposing left turns, well, those are about 70% of all the crashes that happen. Those are the types of collisions that are typically attributable to access. So where are the driveways, where are the intersections, those are the types of crashes that we're really trying to evaluate over the course of study on the potential projects to solve this. So if you look at the TRB Access Management Manual, all the research out there tells us, and a lot of this stuff is really kind of no-brainer, really. As we see access density increasing, so the more access points, the more driveways and intersections we have per mile, the higher the crash rate that you would expect. And we can kind of see that at a baseline, 10 access points per mile is generally result in what we call an average crash rate. So for every 10 we increase, we can see that that composite crash index, or the number of crashes you'd expect, goes up. So kind of keep that in mind as we talk about US 41. Also, it affects traffic operations. Just in general, traffic flow, the free flow speed, decreases significantly as we see access increase. So it's not even necessarily a function of how much congestion is out there. It's just because you have more driveways and more access points, you're not going to drive as fast as the corridor. So it reduces the efficiency for traveling through the corridor. So if we look at what we have on one section of US 41 today, we've got 119 access points within the study area. So that's about 55 per mile. So if you go back and look at those two diagrams I just showed you, obviously this is the type of stuff that's contributing to generally relatively poor travel operations, higher than expected numbers of crashes. And if we look at just the corridor itself and where are most of the access points located, generally speaking, the majority of those are south of the Watson Lane intersection. And again, if you're not overly familiar with the area, Watson Lane is the first signal that you're going to come to as you cross the river. So that's the first major intersection. That's really the first bottleneck that you experience with traffic congestion crossing over into Henderson. So this is our general purpose and need for the study, and as I've already mentioned, really we're looking at improving congestion, reducing congestion, and trying to improve safety. So that's in general what we're trying to do. This section of the 41 now carries 38 to 40,000 vehicles per day. Without a new I-69 bridge on the Ohio River, we expect that to increase, obviously, the demand for regional travel in addition to local travel increases. We expect to be seeing about 1% per year growth rate until a new I-59 bridge, or if an I-59 bridge is constructed. So that's one of the things we've got to keep in mind throughout the course of the study as we're looking at alternatives. What happens if we build a new I-59? So we don't want to overbuild anything here. We've looked at a six-lane widening alternative, and that makes sense if we don't think there's ever going to be a new bridge for the river. If there is going to be a new bridge, it probably doesn't make as much sense. So I'll mention the six-lane option just for that very reason. We're not recommending that, certainly. It's something that's kind of in the back of everyone's mind that if we don't have a new I-69 corridor around Henderson in the future, we may have to be looking at something more substantial than these types of spot improvements that we were recommending in this study. So the large plots that are out on the table really comprise what we call the safety and mobility improvement plan. And it's really all of the concepts that we've developed combined into one graphic, looking at all the individual improvements and the intersections we're addressing, and really didn't know how to time to go through every single one of these projects this morning, but I will focus on a couple of them. Starting with everything from on the small scale, looking at a currently signalized intersection, simply providing left turn lane to that intersection. One of the issues we've heard from a lot of the people that drive this every single day is that it's practically impossible to turn onto US 41, particularly making a left turn, during the PM peak hour. So most folks tend to use North Elm Street along the left side. It's really kind of a baggage road today. And the problem with that is even having that baggage road available, and a lot of the locations where you do tie into the US 41, even the signals, you don't have good terminals. So those intersections don't work all that well. So something as simple as just doing some minor widening and realignment in a location like this, because currently these two approaches for Redding on the west and Marywood on the east are slightly offset. So just bringing the intersection together in a more squared fashion, providing left turn lanes, would improve the location. another location to the just to the north, actually. This is the second, so there's really only three traffic signals currently in this corridor. That was the southernmost one. This one is in the middle of the corridor. This is Ogden Village Shopping Center. Currently, there's not a lot of traffic that's turning into having a shopping center. The shopping center is not quite what it was 25 or 30 years ago. There's not as much development there currently. So this is a location that we think is a good opportunity to relocate this. We're not eliminating it. We're just relocating it to a location that would give us access over to that Elm Street baggage road and also provide the access to the existing shopping center. And the option I'm going to show you next, it could potentially connect to a new baggage road along the east side of US 40. So this would be a good opportunity to provide connectivity to both sides of US 41. So you'd have cross access to the shopping center and the residential area. Watson Lane, again, that's the northernmost traffic signal, and this is the one by far that has the most delay. We've also got a high crash rate at this location. And primarily the issue here is the fact that so much of the traffic coming southbound US 41 is turning left on eastbound Watson Lane. And in the opposite direction, this is a also heavy movement from westbound Watson Lane onto northbound US 41. So the improvement that we're recommending here is providing dual left turn lanes that are significantly longer than the single left turn lane that's there today. And in order to do that, Watson Lane is currently just one lane in each direction. So we've got to do some widening along Watson Lane as well to accommodate that extra left turn lane. Now, ultimately, it would be nice to take us widening all the way over to US 60, but that's a significantly longer widening project. And our recommendation in the study report is going to suggest that that should be considered at some point. But really, the minimum that we would look at would be taking it over to the next 6th Street intersection at Stonegate Drive. As you might imagine, urban corridors, family density development, in some of these cases, the right-of-way costs, and you kind of see those on the summary sheet that I provided you, the right-of-way is as expensive or more expensive than natural construction. So I'm trying to be cognizant of, you know, what's out there right now, what the utilities look like, what the land use looks like, and looking at some of these families. I mentioned the Eastern Baggage Road, and this is really kind of the most, the largest of all of the projects that we discussed. And it really would include some improvements to US 41. So in order to make, as I've already shown, access to the Marywood Redding intersection a little bit better, access to the shopping center. So again, this is that location we just showed 2 minutes ago, the existing signal there at Ogden Village, relocating it to Barker, and then Watson Lane improvements. So if you built, and then the baggage road could really be built in stages. It wouldn't have to all be built at the same time. But you could really build it in three pieces that would provide good connectivity on the backside of all of this development, but you don't have to use 41 to get from one shopping center or one business to another. And that's really kind of what we're trying to encourage here. Obviously, through the regional traffic, we're not trying to get that off of 41. That's not going to happen. But we can at least serve some of those local trips a little better than having to use 41 like they do today. So let's have some of the smaller scale concepts. And then throughout the entire corridor, one of the things we looked at is the possibility of replacing those back-to-back left turn lanes with a raised median. Now, generally speaking, access management guidelines would recommend that once you get over 25 or 30,000 vehicles per day, center left turn lanes just don't tend to work very well. Tend to be problematic. So a raised median where you're eliminating a significant portion of the direct left turn access generally be recommended in this type of situation. So that's kind of what we're talking about here, and doing that within the existing footprint. So we're not talking about any widening, at least perhaps outside of a couple of the intersections. Watson Lane, showing the left turn lanes, we might be looking at a little bit of additional widening outside of this footprint. But we got 82 feet between those curb lines today, and we would do the thing we've seen at the bottom within the same 82 feet. We provide two 12-foot turn, three lanes in each direction, an 18-foot wide raised median that could be, that's wide enough to accommodate a single left turn lane to any of the median openings that are provided. And that also gives you some usable shoulder on the outside of the through lane that we don't have today. So today, where you've got curb and gutter with just a 2-foot gutter band, you can provide a 6-foot shoulder in addition to the 2-foot gutter. So really, you've got an 8-foot usable shoulder for vehicles to break down, for bicycles, pedestrians. We don't have sidewalks out there, so that could be a surrogate provision for bicycles.
About 21 small businesses. on the west side of Highway 41, that would be devastated by a median, by a median. And maybe that would be reduced because a couple of, there'd be breaks in the median that would save a few of them.
Correct. Well, what happened with this section you're seeing here is U-turns are going to be accommodated. So we're talking about eliminating the direct left-turn access, but and it is a median opening, especially the signalized median openings. U-turns could be utilized in order to access those buildings. The existing driveways would remain open as right in, right out, and in as many cases as possible, we're trying to make sure that they've also got back-end road access. So those on the west side that aren't directly tied into Elm Street, you might be looking at opportunities to try to make better connections. And you know, one of the issues out there right now is a lot of businesses have no cross access from one parcel to the next. And that's really not a good situation. That's why some of you have to use this 41. Even if you want to go from one business to one next door,
you can't.
Well, a front door would be fantastic in a location like this, except for the right. And the problem is you have to buy all the businesses in order to construct it. There are locations where they try to squeeze frontage roads in and other corridors, and if you can't get 100 to 150 foot spacing for the frontage road intersection to length of the major intersection, they just do not want.
And once you put the median in, the businesses get a lot cheaper.
But again, the median, we talked about looking at it from the entire corridor length, but it can be built in pieces as well. You don't have to build it from north of the interchange all the way up to north of Robinson Park. You can look at the worst locations, again, most of the access issues tend to be south of Watson Lane. So that would really be the highest priority section for looking at median. And obviously,
I just kind of explained on business interchange and Watson Lane. I didn't count anything north of Watson Lane.
Well, and again, in a lot of these locations, we're trying to provide additional intersection improvement that would accommodate improved access to those businesses in their left turn lane, direct left turn lane access. I haven't been able to go through all those improvements today, but we have that look at that. I mentioned earlier that we have looked at a six-lane widening, and we tried to look at what the least impact would be in terms of widening from the west side or widening on the east side. Looks like in terms of the utility impacts and the right-of-way impacts, widening to the west might be the simplest approach. But again, the right-of-way tends to be quite expensive, and maintenance of traffic issues, trying to widen this while holding traffic, obviously would be pretty significant cost burden over time. So again, we're not recommending this. It's something that has to be kept in mind in the event that the I-69 project continues to stall and doesn't move forward when we're crossing over the highway. So the typical section that we're looking at for a six-lane widening, again, the top is what's existing today. Bottom, we would need to widen that out at least another 12 feet or so in order to provide the additional three-lane intersection. And with six lanes, really, the center median is almost necessary. It's almost mandatory. Because at any of the unsignalized access points, it would be tremendously difficult and extremely unsafe to try to turn left across three lanes and one lane of traffic. So, again, that's something to keep in mind if that six-lane option is going to move forward at any point in the future. So in terms of the traffic analysis we've performed, we've looked at everything from what's happened today to what's going to be in the future. We don't do anything. And generally speaking, the corridor outside of the peak hours, it tends to work pretty well today. It carries a lot of traffic, but because you've only got three signalized intersections, that's where the majority of the delay tends to be focused. So today, the volume to capacity ratios are less than a 1. About 0.96 there on the section immediately south of Watson Lane is our worst case. As I mentioned earlier, without I-69, you see traffic increasing by about 1% per year, and that pushes us over a 1.0. So that tells us we're going to be over capacity in the not-so-distant future, just looking at about 15 years out, if we don't have a new bridge and if we don't do anything else within the corridor. So that kind of tells us that we need to do something. So in terms of trying to evaluate all of these conceptual improvements, we've developed a traffic simulation model that replicates the concepts that comprise that safety in the world. So all the intersection improvements, package road access points, et cetera, are all included in this model. And we've used that to compare today's traffic versus no build if we don't do anything in 2030 versus the conceptual improvements in 2030 with everything in included in that model. And so if we look at what happens if we pursue these improvements, well, we can kind of see that there's definitely going to be some benefit. The existing and the throughput that we're talking about here is a function of what the simulation model outputs in terms of how much traffic can actually be accommodated. We can never get 100% because in the way the model works, we do an AM peak hour generally sometime between 7 and 9 a.m. based on the traffic counts, and a PM peak hour between 4 and 6 p.m. Again, that's updating the day's highest level of traffic over the afternoon rush hour. So, and the way the model works, there's always going to be vehicles in the network when the model starts and when the model finishes. Our goal is to get somewhere around 90%. If we can get 90%, that tells us that we're doing a pretty good job of accommodating the traveling. So today, we're a little bit below that, 83% more than 84% more. If we don't do anything, maybe we'll go down. That's one thing. With the access plan, again, the most conceptual improvements that I kind of talked a little bit about, we get back up to about where we are today. So obviously, it's an improvement over the no good. It's a little bit better than what they're today and going. If you do the six-lane widening, obviously, that's going to be better. You've got an extra lane in each direction, so you're going to serve more traffic with three lanes as opposed to two. But again, at what cost, and is it going to be necessary if I face mileage? We also looked at just total delay throughout the network. So how many hours of delay would everybody experience in the morning and the afternoons? Similar trend. In the morning today, the afternoon today, you're looking at 150 hours of the overall delay. It goes way up to no build. And then with our access plan and our six-lane options, we bring that back down so that it's at least getting closer to what you have up today. And obviously, the 569 are the numbers that I need to play with. Intersections. This is really, again, where most of the delay is happening today. Watson Lane is by far the location that has the most delay. This is showing the average AM peak hour delay. So the dark blue you're seeing, that's today existing. The red is the no-build in 2030. This is with the access plan in green and the six lane. So in most of the cases, you see that the delay goes down significantly. One thing I will point out, though, is in some of these cases, we're showing higher delay at some of these intersections with the access plan alternative. And that's because we're locating more of the turning movements to those signals where they should be safer. When you build back at roads and you improve those intersections, that's our goal, to get more traffic through those safer signals. So the delay we're seeing there is slightly higher than what's there today, but overall it helps US 41 function, though. In the PM, we see a similar trend. So going from no build to the access plan to six lanes, delay goes down to Watson Lane significantly, and slightly higher delay, especially on the buildings. That's the location where we've only got a three-legged intersection right now. We're hoping to make that a four-legged intersection with the new approach to parking. So it's a little bit higher than what's out there today. This is the summary of all the cost estimate information. This is included on the handout that you've got in front of you. Basically, these rightmost columns summarize. We're looking at the design costs, right-of-way, utilities, and construction. Obviously, there would be some benefit to grouping these projects at one time because you'll see some reduction in overall cost of design, et cetera. You build them all at the same time. You build them all piecemeal. Design tends to cost a little more that way, unfortunately. But this just gives you an overall summary of all the projects, how we feel that they serve the purpose you need, how they benefit traffic, how they improve safety, et cetera. So I'd love you to take a look at that, and let me know if you have any questions or comments.
Well, it looked like 41% of your accidents were rear-end collisions, which to me brings to mind either people kind of stuttering as they take off, you know, you've got one car behind another car, it looks like it's taking off and it hits its brakes, the other guy's looking over his shoulder so he doesn't see that he's stopped, or that you have somebody stopping quickly in traffic because they're about to miss the turn. Would not a central turn lane satisfy most of those things? you know, deceleration lanes to the right and set the turn lane lanes to the right and left.
Well, one of the things that we see, though, is that if we can limit the location where we have those turn lanes, you're reducing the potential conflict points where those collisions happen.
But you're not really seeing that many cornering accidents, you're seeing rear ending accidents.
Even the rear end collisions, people tend to enter and exit those turn lanes at various locations throughout the corridor. In this case, not all the rear ends are focused at the signals. And generally, that's what you would expect in the corridor to signalize like this, is that, you know, 90% of your crashes are going to be focused around those signalized intersections. Because that's where the cues come. But what we're seeing along 41 is that in some of these instances, you're having rear end collisions away from the signalized intersections. There are some of those unsignalized access points. So if you can minimize the number of locations where you're accessing the left turn lanes, you're still providing them where you need them, but if you don't have them, you know, basically from end to end, you can minimize the number of conflict points and hopefully reduce the number of crashes.
Well, in areas where we have those, I don't like the name of the suicide lanes in the middle where you turn, are we seeing a lot of accidents in those? Because we haven't had a lot of those in the past. We've got more of them now. Are we seeing a problem with those?
As traffic increases, obviously, the number of vehicles that have the potential to conflict one another makes it worse.
But what's the actual data as opposed to, obviously?
Up to a certain point, some turn lanes generally do improve safety. And once you get over, that's why now, again, the Transportation Cabinet, for example, would recommend that anything over 24,000 vehicles per day would not have a single turn lane. And that's because what happens is once the traffic volumes increase over a certain level, the safety benefit that you get from the turn lane starts to actually work against you. It's not a benefit anymore. It starts to actually introduce additional collisions or changes. So it's obviously a case-by-case basis. That's not always the
situation. You've got a lot of businesses. Industry is not a thriving area. You've got a lot of businesses there and a lot of jobs and medians cost jobs and medians cost property value.
Well, actually, I would argue against that in many cases. If you look at the Somerset example on US 27 through Somerset, Kentucky, they introduced actually the press median through most of that corridor. And they did some widening, so the U-turns were able to be made at all the signalized and the unsignalized median over there. And it's been a very positive impact on the business community. Initially, it was almost universally despised. When the concept was first introduced, the business community came out totally against the entire project. They thought it was for three reasons. They thought access management kills jobs and kills business. But in fact, what we found is that in most cases where these corridor-type improvements have been implemented, because you've improved safety, you've reduced congestion, people that have been avoiding some of these businesses all of a sudden will come back to you.
Every business I've ever owned or been involved in that's gotten a median in front of it has either failed or decreased substantially.
Some cases it depends on the type of business. Like the corner gas station, I would agree.
Well, what you've got in Henderson is corner gas stations, small restaurants, and I'm talking about on the west side.
There's a benefit to some of those like businesses, though, because, again, a lot of this is regional through traffic. All of a sudden, the gas station on one side of the road is easier to get to than this on the other. So you might fill up instead, you know, if you're going southbound, you're going to use the gas stations on the west side, generally speaking. And if you're traveling northbound, the gas station's on the east side. So gas stations are one of those. They're not a destination type of business. So I would agree, in most cases, depending on where they're located, they may see a disadvantage to where they need. However, the destination like this, grocery stores, things like that, that you're going to go to regardless, you know, those tend to see an uptick in business because, again, it's safer and congestion reduces. So if you can tackle those two things, people who are avoiding the area will tend to come back to those areas.
Business is thriving on Highway 41 through Henderson. It's the only area in Henderson I think it is thriving. And business is not thriving on Highway 41 in Evansville except for the intersections because of the median. And I'm not saying we shouldn't have medians in Evansville on Highway 41 that there, but when you put a median in there, you're going to kill a lot of those businesses. I disagree with that. I've seen this. But
fantastic. So I would encourage you to know the active manager manual I referenced earlier. There are numerous case studies all across the country where there has been a positive impact on active management in terms of business. So again, it depends on the type of business, it depends on the corridor. I can't say it's 100%, and it's always going to be a benefit. But generally speaking, when we're talking about safety improvements, like congestion reduction, it does benefit the adjacent businesses. And one of the things that we've looked at, just in terms of trying to compare what the benefits are, the actual cost of these improvements, is we've looked at benefit-cost ratios and looked at just what metrics we can actually measure right now. So the crash reduction and congestion relief are really our two benefits. And trying to equate dollar figures to each one of those, looking at Kentucky State Police average cost of crashes over the 3 years, and if we can get a 25% reduction in crashes, is what the access management.
But what's the reduction with just a center term lane as opposed to what
we need? Well, again, in this case, we have those center term lanes. We already have those. So the higher than average crash rates we have are with those center term lanes. And a single center turn lane would not be a benefit in this location because of the high volume of traffic. So throughout this corridor, except at Twin Cities North of the State Park, then the dual left turn lanes are already provided.
Okay.
So the 25% reduction is again based on all of the empirical data out there for studies that have been conducted all across the country.
Yeah, I do see that now. That's right.
No, no problem. And then looking at just the peak hours of travel and an average of based on the Bureau of Labor Statistics, yes, for Owensboro MSA, maybe we should look at Evansville MSA value, but for Owensboro it's about $17.72 per hour would be the average labor rate. So that gives us about $29 million in benefits from the access and safety mobility plan. The cost, again, you know, impacts the business, we can't manage it ahead on a planning study, obviously. But if you look at just the design, right-of-way utility construction calls improvements, it comes out to about the same value. So our benefit to cost in this case, based on, again, those things that we can actually measure, is about $1.2. So now that we've kind of gone through all that, we've talked about the individual projects, obviously they all can't be built at the same time. It's a $29 million project. So which ones are most important? We asked, again, the stakeholders and local officials at our last meeting to help us, after we get all these presented, tell us which ones are the most important, which ones should happen first. So one, in this case, is not important. Five is very important. We heard Watson Lane. We heard that the Eastern Bracket Grove right here, number two. And then number three was the North Elm Street. We had a little bit of widening and some improvements there. And the Barker Road, the relocating that intersection out of the village. So based on that, our high priority projects are the top. So these are the top three projects that are in our recommendations. In order, Watson Lane, number one, relocating the Freedom of Lava Village, number two, and then the Eastern Bakken Grove, number three. Our medium priority projects, we're not really trying to rank those in any particular order, but it's everything you see there. And then the low priority projects would be the 6 million.
Yeah, one question.
Yes.
If and when, as you said, when 69 gets built, do any of this need it?
I would argue that many of the improvements that you're seeing here will still be a big benefit, obviously, because even with I-69, you still have all of these businesses and the local access issues. So that's why, again, the six-lane widening is not. But the modeling that the NPO has been helpful in providing for us on looking at with and without I-69 and the future demand shows that with I-69 in the future, we're still going to be serving traffic that's similar to what's out there today. So if we're in the 35,000 to 40,000 vehicles per day on average in the future with I-69, those top three improvements are still very much.
You want to lose a lot of route traffic?
You lose some of the regional traffic, but the model shows that for lots of those trips that are crossing the river right now, staying on US 41 is still a shorter travel time. Now, again, that depends on where I-69 is located. There's still lots of what-ifs there. But just based on, if you look at in the old EIS corridor in particular, we're looking at still needing to serve the traffic similar to what's out there.
Highway 41 is our north-south version of the expressway. Mm-hmm. So all the businesses on the far north of that are built, all the residents building in Henderson.
Right. Any other questions? Everybody else? It's not hanging around. I'll be here after the meeting. Can anyone put this up?
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, next on the agenda is FY 2016 2019 tip revisions.
Great.
Yep, we've got a few of them this month. The first is from the City of Evansville, requesting that we have the City Greenway Midway Corridor, needed by pedestrian improvements from Hydelock Avenue to Springtown Road. We're in the project aim for preliminary engineering this year, fiscal 16. It cost us $210,000, and that's being funded with federal STP funds as well as a 20% local match. The next, Town of Newburgh, another trail project, Newburgh River Town Trail, Middle East Trail from Yorkshire Drive, Old 662 West, revised construction schedule from fiscal 16 to fiscal 17. Next, they are federal amendments here. The 5307 Urban Area Formula Grant Operating Assistance provides the 26 program of projects to reflect their final budget and project revisions, as well as that DES number that you see there to read the values on that. The 5307 Urban Area Formula Grant Capital Assistance provides the 16 project again to reflect the final project budget and estimates there. Section 5307, Urbanized Area Formula Grant Planning Assistance, we're simply adding a DES number to that. Transit bus purchase, revised description and budget to reflect the purchase this year of two transit buses, and that is split funding between the 5339 program and congestion mitigation air quality funding. And also operating assistance for the Highway 41 North Route, having project also this year, project cost $515,000 to see there, and that's split between local match and 50%. Federal student funds. Any questions?
We need to make a motion on this one first before we go on to the next.
Yeah, we don't need a motion on the other. So.
Okay. Well, hearing that, does anybody have any discussion or have any questions? We need a motion for the 2016 through 2019 tip amendments as shown. Do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Do we have a second? All right, all in favor? Any opposed? What's your best? All right, great.
Next. This last thing is just a minor modification to the tip, which we don't need a motion for, and that is revising the UTWP planning activities for the NTO, adding those numbers and revising the STP funding and system system to reflect the current budget. UTWP STP cost $165,000 to see there. And then also, adding the DES number simply for the SHIP and the safety planning work that's there in the budget. No change to that value. This is for your information.
Thanks, Greg. Does anybody have any questions? Anybody any comments in close to the meeting or anything anybody might bring up?
Nobody had other we just got honorable mentions in the highway transportation and water. So every girl got honorable mentions for the people. So you guys. Yeah, now
anyone else? All right, if not, can we have a motion to adjourn?